everybody. I'm Tracy Tucker, and welcome to the Who Is In My Genes podcast, where we share adventures in exploring family trees, including tips for researching your own family tree, stories about discoveries, DNA testing and matches, and lots about adoptee searches and advocacy, because we believe everyone has a right to know who is in their genes. In this episode, we're talking convergence. What do I mean by convergence? Convergence is the coming together of two or more things to the same point. If you've thought about it, if your ancestors had not converged, you probably wouldn't exist. Just think about how many people had to meet each other and how many had to have babies together in order to get you to where you are. It is amazing to me to contemplate this, especially when I work on family trees that I can get back into the 1700s, just because you see how many direct ancestors there are and how they had to be in the right place at the right time to create one person's family tree. One of my clients, Mike, wanted me to research his ancestors as far back as I could reasonably go in order to document the family for his younger siblings and their children. We ended up with a family tree that included Mike, his parents, and an additional 7 generations on some lines. The tree I was able to provide to him included his 4 grandparents, 8 great-grandparents, 14 great-great-grandparents, 22 3-times great-grandparents, 24 times great-grandparents, 9 5-times great-grandparents, and 6 6-times great-grandparents, for a total of 85 direct ancestors, including Mike's parents. Now, to be clear, several of these are just names found on marriage or baptismal records and nothing else. Some we found a surprising amount of information on. I love working on projects like this because if I get frustrated or stuck on one line, I just go work on a different line. Occasionally, working on one line will provide information or clues on another line if you keep your eyes open. For example, a mother, brother, father, or sister-in-law could be living with a family that is documented in a census record, so that'll provide or confirm a maiden name. Occasionally, others with the same surname will be listed nearby on a census record as well, which provides clues to use for further research. Wills also come in very handy, as children are often included, with daughters frequently being listed under their married names, and sometimes the sons-in-law are listed as well. Clues, clues, clues. So Mike's tree included around 45 different surnames. On big projects like this, I create a surname list so that I can start remembering all the names in the tree in case I run across a clue somewhere when researching someone else. I alphabetize the surnames, and if there are some more interesting surnames that could be easily misspelled or just plain spelled differently, I brainstorm out the different ways they could be spelled just to get it plugged into my brain. Again, with the spelling. Are you sensing a theme with the spelling? Here's an easy example. Smith sounds like an easy surname, right? How is it normally spelled? S-M-I-T-H, right? But it could be listed in records as S-M-I-T-H or S-M-E-T-H or even S-M-Y-T-H. How about Myers? M-E-Y-E-R-S or M-Y-E-R-S or M-I-E-R-S or even without the S? Simple names even could be spelled several ways. When I was a kid, some other kids thought it was pretty funny to spell my surname Tucker, T-R-U-C-K-E-R, and they'd add a woo-woo afterwards. Are you listening, Rich? And it's not just spelling. sometimes if a foreign name in particular is harder to pronounce, they may just change it to make it easier to say, to spell, or really just to sound more Americanized or Englishized. Is that a word? Englishized? Here's an interesting example. One of Mike's ancestors is John James Poisson from Quebec, Canada. So it's obviously a French name. I'm not French, and I've never studied French, so I don't pronounce it particularly well, and I don't know any French words. Oh, except maybe croissant. So maybe it's pronounced poisson, like croissant. When I was researching John Poisson and his family, I kept getting records for someone with a completely different, decidedly un-French surname, but who really seemed like the same person. I was confused for quite a while, but the more records I looked at, the more I was convinced it was the same person going by two completely different names. And it wasn't just one person, it was a family. Knowing that many surnames were derived from either parts of town they were from, or what their trade or occupation was, etc., and it finally clicking with me that he was from Quebec and was French Canadian, I asked Google what poisson means in French, and it said sticky. That didn't help. But some records I had seen had poisson without the T at the end. So I asked Google for that one too, and guess what it said? If you know French, you already know that it means fish. Guess what the alternate surname John and his family was going by? Fish. No joke. So back to Mike's project. He lives in Florida, and this is where his parents met, but how's this for convergence? You don't need to follow the who here with me. Our focus is on the where. Johann and Ilse are born in Germany and immigrate with their children and son-in-law in the 1800s to Minnesota. Ulrich and Karen are born and marry in Denmark, but make their way in the late 1800s to Minnesota. Jean-Baptiste was born in 1700 in Canada, and he married Marie, also born in Canada. Their children and grandchildren were also in Canada until their great-grandson, Pierre, and his wife, Josephte, moved with their children in the early 1900s to Minnesota. Francois and Marie-Louise were born and married in Quebec, as was their son Abraham, but Abraham and his wife Sophie moved to Wisconsin. Their son James married Jane, who was born in Illinois, but moved to Wisconsin with her parents, who were from originally New York. James and Jane's son, Frank, moves from Wisconsin in the early 1900s to Minnesota. So Minnesota was the place to be. Guys, this is all on Mike's mother's side of the tree. If just one of those people had not moved to Minnesota, what then? Erase everything below them on the tree. In my own biological family, I have a lot of convergence on my mother's side in Wayne County, Tennessee. Philip and Margaret, both born in the early 1700s, immigrated from Ireland to South Carolina. Their granddaughter, Hannah, married Samuel in South Carolina. Samuel was born in Ireland, but his parents were from Scotland. Hannah and Samuel emigrated to Wayne County, Tennessee. Benjamin from Virginia married Marjorie from North Carolina. Their great-grandson Mabon and his wife Rebecca migrated to Wayne County, Tennessee. A different Benjamin, this one from England, married Mary in England, and they emigrated to South Carolina. Their son Henry migrated to Lawrence County, Tennessee, and their grandson was born in, you guessed it, Wayne County, Tennessee. You get the gist of it. This part of my tree goes back to the early 1700s in Ireland and Maryland and includes Scotland, England, Virginia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Illinois, Tennessee, and Alabama, and ends with me being born in Ohio. Another of my clients was looking for more information on her grandfather, as they were having a lot of trouble finding him in the records, even though they knew he was in the Merchant Marines. They knew him as Myron Beam, B-E-I-M. We discovered that this surname was originally spelled B-E-J-M, and he was born as Margin, not Myron Beam, in the Bronx, New York. This discovery led us to being able to find his parents and their stories. His mother, Josepha, was born in 1893 in Warsaw and married Kazimierz Beam there in 1911. They sailed from Bremen, Germany to New York in 1913. Kazimierz, who went by Charles, track that one through the records, why don't you, was born in 1891 in Warsaw, and his World War II draft registration card names his mother as Bronisława Szmak, but she went by Bertha. Bertha was born in 1871 in Poland and first had son Charles with Kazimierz Beam Sr., then married again and had five more children. They arrived in New York in 1908. My client's grandfather, Myron, married Marion in New York. Marion was born in New York, but her father, John, was born in Klemento, Poland, in Russia at the time. John married Anna in the Bronx in 1917. Anna was born in Galicia, Austria. She arrived in New York in 1913. Anna had one known brother, Peter, born around 1909 in Poland. Peter, his wife Jean, and daughter Wanda are listed in records of displaced persons during World War II, leaving Bremerhaven, Germany for the U.S. in 1949. Prior to their departure, they were in a resettlement camp in Munich. The record for this indicates they were previously at Bad Tools in southern Germany, likely the location of an SS officer candidate training camp and subcamp of the Dachau concentration camp, which was also the location of the United States Army's halt of the Holocaust Death March on May 2, 1945. More history. Thankfully, they were able to converge with their family in New York. A lot of these moves may be seen as being made for obvious reasons. War, famine, opportunity. But I am cursed by the curiosity of always wanting to know why. But why is the hardest question to answer. One of my clients wanted to know why his ancestor George moved from West Virginia to Ohio between 1900 and 1910. All I could do was follow the records and hope he left a diary. Well, no diary. No letters found. No notes on his thinking. But we did follow a bunch of land records that documented George buying, inheriting, and selling several pieces of property. And the same for some of his family members, resulting in the move. The only conclusion we could draw was one of opportunity. And it resulted in a beloved homestead for George's family that his descendants were still living on a century later. Why did so many people converge in Minnesota in the 1800s? Well, according to the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota, French and French Canadian traders arrived to establish fur posts among the Ojibwe and Dakota tribes in the early and mid-19th century. And by 1850, many settlers from New England and immigrants from Norway, Sweden, Ireland, and Germany had settled there. There was inexpensive farmland and a growing industrial base, plus the climate was similar to Northern Europe. By 1896, official election instructions in Minnesota were being issued in 9 languages: English, German, Norwegian, Swedish, Finnish, French, Czech, Italian, and Polish. Why did so many of my ancestors converge in Wayne County, Tennessee? Wayne County is bordered on the south by the state line with Alabama, just east of Mississippi. It was created in 1817 from parts of other counties and was named after General Mad Anthony Wayne of the Revolutionary War. The first settlers seemed to arrive from other parts of Tennessee and the Carolinas to claim occupants' claims and military land grants and warrants. Occupant claims or grants allowed settlers to claim land in Tennessee in the early 1800s by meeting certain requirements, such as having resided on the land for 3 years and improving it somehow, such as building a house on it, or to claim land that was vacant. Military land grants or warrants were certificates given to veterans or their heirs, granting them the right to claim free land in the public domain. These were offered from 1775 to 1855, mainly to encourage enlistments, but also to reward veterans for their service during the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, the Indian Wars, and other military actions. In fact, my 4 times great-grandfather, Joseph Staggs, helped settle 48 Mile Creek in Wayne County in 1818. In 1825, he was assigned another 25 acres by Robert Nesbitt in the 8th District in Wayne County on 48 Mile Creek. Joseph Stagg's wife was Nesbitt, so this was a familial transfer of property. James Nesbitt served as a private in the company commanded by Captain Grosvenor of the 3rd Regiment U.S. Infantry in the War of 1812. James received a land warrant for 160 acres, anywhere within the 6 million acres appropriated that was not already claimed. So these 25 acres given to Joseph was likely part of James Nesbitt's original claim. Also, in 1842, the second person sent to the Tennessee State Prison by the Wayne County Court was David Staggs, who was sentenced for 1 year, presumably for larceny. Whoopsie! I'm not sure how David is related, but surely he is, right? I had never even heard of the surname Staggs until I discovered it in my own family tree. One day, I will figure out the relationship. By the way, in 1861, Wayne County, Tennessee, voted to remain in the Union instead of secede, and it was one of only 8 counties in West or Middle Tennessee to support the Union. Woo-hoo! If you don't know what I'm referring to, Google the Civil War. Convergence is a really important aspect in researching family histories because up until the miracle of artificial insemination and in vitro fertilization, a man and a woman needed to be in the same place at the same time to create a baby. We focus a lot on this aspect when trying to find biological parents for adoptees or those trying to find a birth father. If there are 3 brothers as candidates, which one was the right age and in the right place, wherever the mother was, at the right time? Speaking of mothers and fathers, in the U.S., Mother's Day is in May and Father's Day is in June. Family history can make a great gift. If you have your ancestor information and want to create a nice, frameable family tree for mom or dad, we have easy-to-use templates on Etsy you can buy for less than $5 and fill in and print yourself. If you don't have your ancestor information, I'd love to help you discover who is in your genes. Oh, and where they converged. Thank you for listening to the Who Is In My Genes podcast with me, Tracy Tucker. If you enjoyed it, please give us a great review to help others find the show and follow us to get notified of new episodes. Visit us online at whoisinmygenes.com for all the ways we can help you find out who is in your genes, and follow us on Instagram for the images we mention in the show. Links are in the show notes. Join us next week for a new episode of Adventures in Exploring Family Trees.